And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where the NBA draft is over, came and went without a single current NBA player being traded. However, that does not mean it was not exciting. And for the first time, I got to live through the draft on a, I believe, five-hour edition of The Jump. I was not on it for 5 hours, but one of our two guests that are in studio here in New York today was. That's Rachel Nichols, host of The Jump. How are you doing?
My legs work. I was worried after 5 hours. It's like 5 hours straight of sitting, which I haven't done in quite some time. Even on a cross-country flight, right? You're supposed to like get up and walk around. Why are you looking at me like that?
No,
I'm intently
listening to you.
Yeah.
Also, I'm tired. And I may have just spaced out and heard nothing. I heard the Charlie Brown voice. You're sitting to my right and sitting to my left is
amazing.
One of the Low Post Podcast MVPs, Brian Windhorst. How are you?
Thanks for saying that. We were saying everywhere around you on that set, Rachel, were signs and pieces of tape with things that said, get up.
Yes.
Because the show that tapes on that is usually
in that studio.
Not tapes, it's live. But get up. Not like get up, exclamation point. So here you are 5 hours, you're sitting there. I didn't know if you actually had – all the breaks were short.
They were. And unannounced.
That's a different story.
That was a good time.
Right.
I don't think I could go 5 hours without going to the bathroom.
I thought I would get up and maybe do a lap, right? Walk around. But as Brian notes, our breaks, we had to match up with the breaks of the actual draft. So I didn't, you guys were both wearing IFBs?
I was.
No,
there
I was not.
Only, yeah, there's only.
IFP for the listeners. I do not know this. IFB?
IFB.
See, I don't even know the hell. That's the thing that goes in your ear where they tell you what's going on. And
exactly.
I didn't have one last night. So yes. I did not know what was going
only
on.
Only about half the people on the set had them. And they would say in my ear, okay, 10 seconds to break. We're going to break in 10 seconds. And whoever's talking doesn't know that
sometimes
in 10 seconds.
Sometimes they would just say break.
Yes.
And like, not like in 10 seconds, like break now.
Right. So there we go. Which left us with, I thought, lovely cliffhangers for the viewer that we could then pay off when we came back from the
break. You know what the highlight of the show was for me?
Hmm.
My personal highlight was when the Wizards drafted Troy Brown.
Junior.
That's
lots
a
of juniors in fourths and thirds.
And Rachel turned to me and said, Zach, do you have any thoughts on Troy Brown being picked by the Wizards? And I literally said on television, nope.
that's exactly what happened.
And then I transitioned to, well, they were talking about attaching it to Martin Gortat. I transitioned back into an NBA, but I had nothing.
What you were there for? You were not there to break down.
Troy Brown could have been in the studio sitting next to me, and I would have been like, I don't know.
Well,
is that Marvin Bagley?
We actually had a Wizard on the show, Markieff Morris.
Yeah, Markieff was there.
And we never asked him about his new teammate. So that, you know.
I actually tried to ask him about Martin Gortat and possible trade rumors, but we went to break.
I was just asking, was literally on the basically asking Marcus Morris if he was concerned or was expecting a possibly getting traded to San Antonio as part of a Kawhi trade. Well, it was on the tip of my tongue. I was going to ask him about that.
How are they getting Kawhi?
Boston.
Oh, the Marcus Morris. I thought you said Markieff Morris.
No, Marcus.
It's. I did not get a lot of sleep.
And I did say Marcus.
I don't know. Morris.
Anyway, I was just asking him, and you know those guys don't care. They'll answer any question. That's what I love about the Morris twins. They'll just be real. They'll tell you right to your face. And he was about ready to answer.
He was.
And was like, "What's a break?"
They were like, break.
And then they were like, okay, Morris twins, goodbye. like, wait a minute. We were going to get him basically saying something about Kawhi. Nope, gone.
Now that you saw them in person together, could you tell them apart?
So here was the thing. I could not. Markieff's beard is a little bit longer.
I was going to say, the hair both on the top and bottom of the face. So
however,
the hair is a little longer on top and the beard is a little longer.
My mnemonic device, Rachel, was that Markieff was wearing a red, white, and blue top.
Striped shirt.
Wizards colors.
Okay.
So I said, that's the Wizard. Markieff. That's how I did it.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
Well, it was a fun show.
Did you pronounce his name correctly?
I had some issues with Luka Doncic.
Yay!
Luka Doncic. That's pretty good.
Throughout the show. Well,
okay,
it's pretty good now.
It's pretty good now.
What did you say? Luka Doncic?
I kept saying
Doncic.
Doncic.
Ooh.
First it was Doncic for a while, and then it was Doncic. And because
Doncic, yeah.
I I just let Brian go.
She let me go.
For about 30 to 40 times that we mentioned Luca's name on the show. But by hour five, I got to say something. And we had Fran Fraschilla on.
I also, let me just say that.
Who is the second next best next to Zach at name pronunciations,
yes,
of the.
He's Mr. European Basketball.
Eastern European.
I did bring out
region.
With me the sheet that the NBA provides with all the pronunciations. I had it with me on set. Although I probably should have mastered Doncic before, I have to say. But, you know, but then I rotated seats, and when I came back, it wasn't there.
Ooh.
So that's my only defense.
That's the number 3 pick in the draft.
I know.
Okay, so let's talk about the draft, because it did just happen. And now we have how many days until free agency? 9 days. Well, we have 7 days until LeBron's option, which is really – when the SHIT is the is going to hit the fan.
No one listening to this podcast doesn't know what you're saying when you spell that out.
Why is
it's
it
like
hitting
a 4-year old?
Mental Floss just wrote someone at Mental Floss devoted their time to writing a piece on all the idioms that come up on the Low Post that I don't understand.
I was
and then
say,
explaining the
that's
origin
like right up
of
your
them.
That's your thing.
No, they took it from the podcast.
Okay.
Well, why is the hitting the fan? Look, when has ever hit a fan is what I'm saying. Who throws – do someone throw it at a fan and then it spreads around? Is that why?
Yes, because –
you know what? I just – let's stop.
The concept is that you have something that's not so good and then it hits the fan and now it's a
it's
real
everywhere.
Problem. It goes from being like a problem but, you know, contained
right.
to being uncontained.
And
all
so, and that's the worst thing people could think of to hit the fan.
My
that's,
greatest hope for the two of you is that this conversation gets aggregated.
Well – I think that
aggregators roundup.
I'll be talking about them in a moment. I think when you say that someone shits the bed, it's a great visual thing because it's a disaster when that happens. An absolute disaster.
You have experience with that?
I was going to say.
Well, I mean,
do you have a child now?
I have a child. He hasn't. Well, he has done it, but it's, you know, whatever. Anyway,
oh my God.
I like that. I like
this
that.
This is taking a dark turn.
Something about the I'll say about the aggregators. What I'm about to say is my opinion. It's an informed opinion.
Are you saying it's a fact?
It's not an opinion. What I'm saying is it's not a report.
Okay.
It's my opinion.
Okay.
It's an informed opinion.
Is it a rapport?
we're not going to have much of a rapport once this. One of my friends in China was telling me that Chinese aggregation had gotten something with me wrong yesterday.
Oh man.
So I've dealing with at least nobody here. Who works in Bristol can see Chinese aggregation. So my feel is that LeBron is not picking up that option, that LeBron is going to unrestricted free agency, and that will result basically in San Antonio and Houston being out of the mix. I think he will interact with them, but I think it's Philly, Cleveland, or L.A., with Cleveland or L.A. being the two real choices and Philly sort of being there.
Well, we were supposed to talk about the draft, and we're already on LeBron. That's how the NBA works.
Isn't it until the Chris Paul thing last year? We would just talk about any of these opt-outs as if they were 99.9% locked.
In fact, there was a report last year. It was probably so the person didn't make it up, that Chris Paul, in fact, had opted out and was not using it. And then 24 hours later or 48 hours later.
Did Chris Paul get traded on the equivalent of today? Did that happen the Friday after the draft?
I feel like it was next week.
Yeah.
We could look it up.
I'm tired from last night, so I'm not sure I can actually punch the buttons on my phone.
I'm going to say circa June 27th.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But right, before Chris Paul, I mean, this is news now because we're coming on the heels of Chris Paul last year. And it basically says, okay, if he doesn't opt in, him engineering a trade to a team that would require that kind of clearing of cap space would be out. So it's in a process of elimination.
I mean, nothing's impossible.
He could still be signed and traded.
Yes.
Kevin Garnett tells us nothing is impossible.
That's right.
The great sage.
But it would be more feasible to if you wanted to go to Houston or San Antonio to opt in.
Sure. Well, we've got 7 days to talk about LeBron, and we've been talking about LeBron for 15 years.
Right.
Got to get off LeBron.
We didn't even have podcasts when LeBron. We didn't have Twitter. We didn't have smartphones.
We had blog boys, though.
Rachel was Rachel Alexander. These are all things that are happening.
Is that your maiden name?
Yes.
Rachel A. Nichols is
Rachel. Nice Rachel Alexander.
It's a nice name, Rachel Alexander.
Thank you.
Last night's draft will be remembered for three things. Number one, Luka Doncic for Trae Young. Number two, Michael Porter slipping to 14. And related, number three, the Philly-Phoenix trade in which the Suns traded the 16th pick in the draft, Zaire Smith, and the Heat's 2021 unprotected first-round pick to Philly for the 10th pick, which was one of the Bridges. One of the Bridges, whichever.
Both Bridges got traded, by the way.
Yeah, a Bridge. A Bridge.
Wait till Zach. I didn't. What Zach's about to say, I didn't realize till he came in here and told me.
So I fact checked this with a lot of people, so I'm pretty sure it's right. I slept for about.
By the way, that's a fantastic sentence. Continue.
I slept for about 4 hours, so it could be. It could be wrong. So let's. So this trade is going to be fascinating to watch down the road. We're going to start with Philly Phoenix. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because the
he's got his notes, Rachel.
The rate I'm looking at my notes. The rate of what teams charge or sit down.
Look at that piece of paper.
That's your water, by the way.
Yeah, it's your. Anyway, what teams pay as a price for moving up in the draft? And
Low
how many
Post listeners? I'm definitely going to sneak a photo of Zach's notes from today.
Can I
even
talk
better
on my
than
own
last
podcast?
Time. No, come on.
Okay, what teams pay to move up in the draft and how many places they move up and to what pick they move up is an endlessly fascinating thing to me. And Pelton has written a lot about it as well. So, but trace this with me. 2015 trade deadline. Phoenix trades a very lightly protected Lakers pick for Brandon Knight. Okay? It was top three protected, I believe.
Yet it still was protected for several years.
And was protected for several years. I think it was top three, whatever it was, to Philadelphia.
It was top one this year, right?
Yep.
Yes. No, it was unprotected this year, I believe.
Oh, it was unprotected.
Yeah. Okay. To Philadelphia. Michael Carter-Williams is involved, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Then, like 5 minutes later, they trade Goran Dragic to Miami for two first-round picks, including an unprotected 2021 pick. Great haul for Goran Dragic, who's got a foot out the door, is angry at Phoenix, the whole thing.
And the pick that they had last night, which was the 16th pick.
Yes, we're going to get to that.
Okay.
So all of that happens.
Don't interrupt him.
3 years later, at this draft, they trade everything they got for Goran Dragic, the 16th pick plus the unprotected Heat pick, for the guy that got taken by the Sixers with the Lakers pick that they traded for Brandon Knight. That's
right.
Really hard to do.
That's amazing. That's really cool.
I didn't realize that.
I like that.
They traded for the Lakers pick back.
Right.
In like a roundabout way, they traded Goran Dragic and two first-round picks to get back a pick they already had in the first place from Steve Nash. That's worthy of a not great Bob. Sorry, it's a not great Bob.
But it's for the NBA symmetry of things. I think it's nice for all the rest of us.
Well, on the bright side, you left out the fact that they traded Isaiah Thomas, who became an All-Star, on that day as well. On the bright side,
and the reason Goran wanted to leave is that they had 100 players.
I don't know if anyone would buy a book about the bad Phoenix Suns. They bought many copies of a book about the good Phoenix Suns by Jack McCallum, mm-hmm. The 7 seconds or less. But this has been like – the last 4 years has been
– Well, at least they didn't give Brandon Knight a $70 million contract. And then, well, he got hurt. I mean,
the moment they tried to tank from that moment when they traded Gortat to Washington for a first-round pick right before the 13-14 season and tried to tank – everything has been topsy-turvy. Then they won 48 games by accident, and everything has been like a complete chaos since. So that Heat pick, now we'll see where it ends up, but that could be a jewel pick that they traded to move up six spots, essentially, in the draft. Who knows where it will end up, but they could end up having traded a pick that's as good as the pick the Mavericks traded to move up from 5 to 3 and pick Luka Doncic. It could end up being that good of a pick. On the other hand, it could be a case of like when Chicago traded 16 and 19 to move up and draft Doug McDermott, which is essentially trading the 19th pick to move up five spots. It could end up being like that, or it could end up being a total disaster.
Gary Harris was in that, you know.
Yeah, that was it ended up being Harris and Nurkic for McDermott, which turned into a complete heist for Denver and is sort of the poster example of why you don't trade up in that range. Trading up from 5 to 3 is different. I'm fascinated by what Phoenix does now because they have Ayton.
Also, just point out that Philly had assets that were valuable last night that they would have been willing to trade for Kawhi Leonard. Those assets lost a little bit of value last night because they are now actual players.
Isn't that amazing?
But it's like a new car. But now they just acquired an asset that they now could reintroduce into the Kawhi talks if they get to that.
Well, and think about – I mean, I think they do that trade 100 times out of 100 without Kawhi being on the market.
It's the Sixers.
Yeah, it's an objectively great trade
Because Brett Brown – I know he made some sort of crack about Brett Brown, the GM, overruled Brett Brown, the basketball coach, but he is a basketball coach, has been a basketball coach his whole life. I'm not sure a basketball coach really cares about that. It was actually a sign that Brett Brown was acting like a general manager.
Well, they have a lot of high-level people that are still
but
there.
I mean, they had to talk him into it. I mean, had it been a year ago, Brett Brown would have been in the corner and he could have said, you know, I kind of like Mikal Bridges. I kind of like to keep him. And Brian Colangelo could have been like, listen,
Mikal Bridges' mother was probably in the corner saying, I'd like to keep Mikal Bridges. That is a weird – it went in 10 minutes from being one of the nicest, sweetest stories we've had in the draft in a while to – I mean, it was sad watching that. I was watching some of the clips again this morning.
I still haven't watched it. In fact, just before you guys got here, I watched Vlade – I finally watched Vlade Divac call the Kings a young super team and
yeah.
say that
more than once, three
and,
times,
and,
I believe in that
and
quote.
Say that Marvin Bagley can play some three, which is, you know, last night was rock bottom for Sacramento fans. I now feel bad. It was rock bottom.
Is it?
Well, there's been like you could see it start to chip away. Like when you used to make fun of the Kings, you'd get like a solid portion of the fans saying you're wrong. You don't understand why we did this salary dump. We're going to get Rondo. It's going to really work. And then like. More and more people start realizing, oh, actually, that's just a terrible trade. And
right.
Now it's just that now they're like, fire everyone. We hate everything. It's all over. We stink. It turns out, yes, we were bad the whole time.
I forgot that they – I was looking at their draft history. I forgot some of the stuff that they did. But, you know, when I watched Vlade say that, I thought he said, no, we have a super team. We don't have a super team. We have a super team. I thought, no, he just said we have a super team, not a super team. And then in the next sentence, he said, and we beat some of those super teams. I was like,
he's absolutely.
I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Can I ask you guys a more existential draft question?
I'm not done talking about the Suns.
Okay. And when
but
you're done.
You can ask.
I'm actually curious. Okay. I have two great minds in front of me, and I want to know. I always think it's interesting that during these kinds of trades, like the ones you're talking about, the value, when it's a hard player, an actual player, the value of that player can fluctuate depending on the fit in the new place versus the old place, right? Victor Oladipo is a great example of this. How much was Victor Oladipo worth to the Thunder versus how much he clearly was worth to the Pacers? And I feel like organizations have this vast amount of room in terms of the front office and the coaching staff and the training staff in terms of if Utah gets an asset, quote-unquote, meaning a player or a young player, that asset's probably worth more in Utah than it is in some other places because of their player development. The macro of that example, though, is with picks, right? Because you have a tangible person who has a set of skills and a team can maximize that guy or not, but he's the same guy. He's 6'6", he's 6'6". With a pick, and you talk about picks being like new cars where they, you know, the minute you take them off the floor, do front offices realize, hey, we're so much better at drafting, we're so much better at this, so that pick is going to be more valuable to us, or, yeah, our history isn't so good, so we're going to trade this for an actual player because at least we know what we're getting. Does that ever come into the equation, or does everyone think they're great at it?
I honestly, sometimes it has to do with selling it. Selling the trade. Like, what was the trade last year? I'm trying to think. Oh, we traded this guy for a first-round pick. And then you get the details a couple hours later and you realize it's, like, not really a first-round pick.
Well, there are a few trades like that. There was the Jeremy Grant. I think that was two drafts ago whenever Jeremy Grant got traded to Oklahoma City. Maybe that was last year's draft.
But sometimes it's like, hey, we traded this guy for two firsts. You're like, well, that's top 20 protected, and then it turns into 2 seconds. That's not really a first. But some of it is like, hey, we know we're probably not going to get a first here, but we've got to be able to sell to our fan base and to our owners. I'm not saying that's what happened last night.
Well, just when you were talking about, that turned into Gary Harris. I mean, I'm losing.
Gary
I got
Harrison,
3 hours of sleep.
Yusuf Nurkic.
Okay, so that turned into – well, it turned into that because Denver drafted those guys
right,
and knew to draft those guys.
In my
that's like the Jordan Bell thing. They didn't sell Jordan Bell. They sold the –
And you kind of have to believe.
I loved it. I loved that they got pilloried so badly for that, that no one would sell Golden State a pick last night.
And
I
also,
loved it.
Generally, there was no picks. Were there any picks sold in the second
round? No one should be selling Golden State picks. Who among the other 29 teams should be, yes, let's help Golden State
get better? You know who definitely
–
I don't want to make fun of the Bulls anymore. It's a year old. Like, the Bulls are like the last team that should be selling Golden State.
I will say this, though. The Trailblazers traded the 38th pick to – I'm trying to think who they traded to. But they traded the 38th pick, and Neil O'Shea said something like, well, you don't really get impact players at 38.
Draymond Green raises his hand.
That may not be an exact quote, but he said something along those lines.
Is he 35, Draymond?
32, I think.
Yeah. Okay. I thought it was 35. But anyway, the point being is that's obviously not true. You can get difference-making players. Not in the history of 38th picks, they're not all difference-making players. But that was reminded me of when the Nets traded the pick that became Damian Lillard to the Blazers.
Top three protected.
And they said there's only three guys in this draft who really could make a difference.
Right. I mean, it's just when you guys talk about, that turned into so-and-so, so he traded him for so – in your mind or in a fan's mind, he traded him for so-and-so. We talk all the time, of course, about the Celtics-Brooklyn deal that is finally, right, mercifully over as of last night's draft. Danny Ainge and the front office in Boston, they make excellent selections with the draft. So that deal was exacerbated by how bad it looked for Brooklyn, even though it was going to be bad no matter what. If Brooklyn, not the current front office, but the front office of the time, had been making those picks, if Sacramento's front office had been making those exact picks that Danny Ainge made over the last two or three years, I don't think you'd have the same players.
Jaylen Brown was not a popular pick. I mean, Danny Ange was panned, maybe too strong a word, but people thought that was a reach.
But it wasn't regarded as a very strong draft.
Right.
It was a little bit, you know.
But
even Tatum, the fact that he was able to swing, in essence, Tatum for Fultz a first round pick.
There's another
no matter
kind
what
of,
you
a
think
very
of,
good first round.
Right.
Pick.
Even if Markelle Fultz turns out to be very good, you're not going to say he's that so pick, much better than Jason Tatum, who's excellent.
That pick
and
is not one of those.
It was get a first round pick out of it.
That pick is not one of those just announced.
Right.
That was a pretty good pick, the Sacramento pick.
Well, and that dates back to when the Kings traded pick swap rights and an unprotected 2019 pick to dump salary
that was
onto
amazing.
The Sixers.
To sign.
To sign Rajon Rondo, Marco Bellinelli, and Kosta Kufis, which was – that I've said this before. That is qualitatively the worst trade any team has made since I started covering the NBA. It's worse than the Nets trade. It's worse than the Nets Damian Lillard trade, which might be worse than the Nets trade. It made no sense. It was objectively so preposterous. And it came back to haunt them a little bit last year with the pick swap, although they ended up getting Fox, who's going to be good. And then this pick that they don't have next year, and which means people think they're going to try and be good again next year. So we'll see what happens with that. But to your point on the new car thing, it's not that they're like – it's a weird thing where they do become less valuable once they're human beings and not picks. But part of the reason for that is because – I mean, the reason for that is that if you want to trade them, you know, if you wanted to trade for Kawhi last night, you do it during the draft because San Antonio can use your pick to pick whoever they want. And now those picks are people. And if you didn't pick the person that San Antonio wants, you don't have that person. Whereas the 2021 pick is whoever San Antonio wants it to be, if and when, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying the Sixers are going to trade for Kawhi, but they're going to try.
Let's put it this way. If Dan Gilbert knew that the pick that they were trading Kyrie for was going to be number 8, does the trade look like what it looked like?
Right.
You really want to get me started on what that trade looked like at the time?
Rachel has been on this incorrectly for a long time.
Since August. but, you know, that's fine.
Phoenix, and so on the flip side, Phoenix trades that pick, and I think one of the front office dynamics at work is Phoenix is under pressure to be good now. This front office is under pressure to make the Phoenix – or decent now. And so, like – 2021 is so far away. Like, who cares? We need to keep our jobs now. We need to please our owner now. Like, that's a price that it either will pay happily or we won't be here because we'll be fired. Phoenix becomes a very interesting team in the offseason because they have all these kids. We talked about this on the show last night. They have all these kids, but there's no question that they want to at least be, I mean, I got to look at what their record was last night or last year. They want to at least be like within sniffing distance of the eighth seed next year. They want to make some sort of run, and so they're going to try and get a little more experience. Like a lot of their experienced guys are just you know, with apologies to some of them, are just not helpful players anymore. They were 21-6-1. They got a long way to go. Although they obviously didn't try to win. And they only have, I think, like $6 million in cap space right now. But if they decline Elfrid Payton, if they renounce Elfrid Payton, they can get up to like 16. And then you can do some other things like stretch Jared Dudley. You can get into – they're going to try and do something.
And who is that player, you think?
I don't know. But, well, I mean, if they renounce Elfrid Payton, they need a they need someone to play point guard, which, I mean, the most obvious – well, it's not going to be him. The most obvious possible trade in the whole league is Phoenix trading some of their young stash – for a point guard. I don't know who that point guard is going to be, but I would bet good amount of money that one of these guys ends up on Phoenix. I don't think it'll – like Dennis Schroeder will be available. That's not particularly exciting.
He's very available.
I don't think they can get Kyle Lowry for many, many reasons, but that's interesting. Everybody will want to link Kemba Walker to them, which is like kind of interesting. If I were the Nets, I would call them and say, hey, we have Jeremy Lin. Perfect placeholder point guard. Give us Dragan Bender and salary filler.
He's not a point guard, but you know, we were talking last night about, is there a team out there that goes gives the offer to Marcus Smart that gets him to not take the qualifying offer from the Celtics? I mean, that's a guy who he won't put up numbers per se, but if you want to win more games and you want to instill a method or a sort of a
culture.
Very
right?
Good, Rachel. Good job.
3 hours sleep.
Dude. Yeah, you got more than yeah, less than I did. So I don't excuse. You know, I don't know. Is Phoenix that team? I don't know.
What do you guys think? What do you think is going to happen with Smart?
I 3 weeks ago I was saying he'll take the qualifying offer, mm-hmm. and now I still think that's a large possibility, but I think the larger possibility is that he does get an offer sheet that's good enough for him to sign. I know you disagree with me. I think someone is going to give him – I think he's going to sign an offer sheet with somebody. That would be my guess.
I just think he realizes that the market in 2019 for him could be so much better, and I don't think he's afraid to risk it.
I don't think he's afraid to risk it either. I just think he's going to get enough from somebody that he's like, you know what? Okay. This mitigates those circumstances.
Okay. Are so many guys kicking the can down to 2019 that's actually going to change how good that free agent market is for these players?
To some degree, yeah. I mean, Dwayne Dedman opted in. There were reports that Danny Green opted in, which is very surprising to me because Danny Green, to me, his floor is the mid-level exception for many years, for 3 or 4 years, whatever is allowable, which approximates the $10 million that he's turning down or that he's opting into. So I thought, you know, just lock in. I think he's 30. Just lock in that deal. But that was a somewhat surprising one to me.
I'm not that surprised by it.
I said somewhat.
2019 is a good year to be a free agent.
It is.
At least right now.
And it still is good. Even if all these guys opt in, it's still better.
I think the issue, Rachel, is a couple of teams. There's only a handful. Was there maybe seven teams that have appreciable space right now?
Right.
Is that something like right? That, yeah.
Some of these teams we don't think are going to spend. Like, we don't think that the Bulls are going to be aggressive in the free agent market. We think the Bulls are going to be aggressive in the take a player from a team that's desperate to get rid of money
sure.
market. Atlanta is another team that has space. Do they really intend to go out and aggressively sign free agents? I don't know. So even the teams that have space aren't necessarily even bidding. Like, it'd be one thing if Atlanta was out there like Brooklyn was a few years ago and is actually bidding for players and trying to steal. Because there are, Zach, I think there's five restricted free agents that could potentially be in play. Marcus Smart is one of them. Clint Capella.
Right.
Zach LaVine. Jabari Parker.
I'm fascinated by Jabari Parker and what happens there.
Restricted free agents?
Yeah.
Nurkic.
Nurkic.
I think Nurkic is going to take his qualifying offer. Nurkic turned down a lot of money in October.
Well, if he's going to take his qualifying offer, if...
I don't think... Who's offering Nurkic more than the mid-level? What's the team?
Yeah, well, that's the funny.
Nobody
yeah.
needs centers, and there's no cap.
I didn't think about Nurkic. That's right. That's right.
Parker's the one to me.
But there's another one that I'm forgetting.
And Smart. Those two.
But I mean, like those are types of players that you would think like Chicago. Well, Chicago has LaVine. That Chicago or Atlanta would, you know, if you're a young team, you take a swing at a guy to see if that team will match. I just don't know if they're going to do that. Like if Atlanta or Chicago's going to do that. Julius Randle was the other.
Oh yes, yes.
You know. I didn't have Nurkic in that five.
That's the thing. Dallas can only sign one of these guys, right? I mean, they've all been linked to Dallas along with DeMarcus Cousins. Like, once Dallas plays its card, like, the market is really cold after that. Among the other plot twists in the Phoenix thing, Phoenix-Philly thing, Michael Porter slipping to 14 changed the whole draft. If the Clippers take Michael Porter at 12 or 13 and Jerome Robinson is the one that falls, so here's what might happen. Denver did not expect Porter to be there. He's there. They snap him up, said, we just can't pass up the upside. Then after they take him at 14, they are on the phone with 15, which is Washington, 17 with Milwaukee, and I'm guessing, but haven't checked yet, 16, which is Phoenix, trying to trade for one of those picks because they want Zaire Smith. And so they're offering, from what I was told, a very lightly protected future first-round pick, maybe even in next year's draft, a second-round pick. I think they had 43 last night, cash, and maybe one of their young players who doesn't play much for 15.
They have no problem getting off of money. They wouldn't mind that, actually.
For 15, 16. Well, I don't know 16.
Well, he wanted 16.
15
right?
and 17 for
did he
sure.
He go 16?
He did. And okay. while that's on the clock, they're calling Milwaukee at 17. They're calling Washington at 15. And so if the draft unfolds differently and Porter's taken above them and Smith falls to them, they're taking Smith. And I don't know if Phoenix does that trade because, you know, that trade was involving Smith going to Philadelphia. So Porter falling changed the draft on like many, many, many different levels. It's very, you just don't, I would like to be in a war room one year just to see the chaos when Porter falls, Denver takes him, all their other plans are out the window, but then this whole other contingency. Get on the phone with every team that is picking between now and 18 to try and get another pick.
We need like an NBA version of that Draft Day Kevin Costner movie.
That movie
right?
was so bad. That guy is the worst GM in the history of sports movies.
Because of his use of post-it notes?
He traded like six first round picks in this to draft a guy at number one who was going to be available to him at like wherever he was picking in the first place. It was terrible.
At one point, he traded 3 second-round picks.
I don't know. He traded a lot of picks.
Yeah. And that is a Cleveland movie, right?
That is for sure. Yes.
It's interesting.
What was the name of the guy he picked? It was on the note card. Nobody.
Right. So-and-so or nobody. It's amazing.
Mac, I think.
It's amazing how many sports movies have been made about Cleveland sports teams, considering
all better than the teams themselves.
Considering the history, recent
also,
history of recent Cleveland sports teams.
I mean, like, we really haven't had a great basketball movie in a while.
That's true.
And the basketball movies that we have had are kind of like.
There's no like canon movie like the
well,
one. Right.
Hoosiers.
I mean recently. So there's right. no Hoosiers. There's no Blue Chips. There's no, right. you know, whatever.
Vontae Mack.
Space Jam.
Vontae Mack taking over hotshot quarterback Bo Callahan.
Because not everyone Good went job. To Bo Callahan's birthday party, Zach.
No, but also didn't he take the $100 bill? Wasn't that in that movie?
Yeah.
He took the $100 bill in the scouting report or something and didn't give it back. Is that the same movie?
It is the same movie. I don't remember
if
it was
that movie in the theater.
Player.
I think I paid money to see that movie in the theater.
The thing about it is that hit home for me because, and it was very strange, I do watch a lot of college football. I don't watch a lot of NFL. But I was in love with this linebacker who played at Buffalo, who I thought would be awesome for the Browns, named Khalil Mack, who I thought was just one of the – because I watched the Mid-American Conference, and I thought this was great. And then so here's this movie about this linebacker who actually played at Ohio State in the movie, but named Mack
that the Browns
triumphantly took. Meanwhile – They take the idiot quarterback, Johnny Manziel.
I was
going
to say, what happened in that draft? That was the Manziel.
The guy, Mack, who was named All-Pro at defensive lineman and linebacker in the same year. That's how good of a player he's become in the NFL. That's all.
And that was the Manziel draft?
Yeah.
You know who's awesome?
Brian Windhorst?
I don't think enough people just recognize the awesomeness.
Okay.
Kevin Costner.
So
Kevin Costner is awesome. And yes, Waterworld happened, okay, and it was kind of a disaster. And Field of Dreams is probably overrated if you go back and watch it again.
How dare you, sir?
But Bull Durham, Tin Cup
is so good.
Sneakily.
No, Tin Cup is so good. First of all, Rene Russo is a goddess. Let's just not kid
also,
ourselves.
Cheech Marin, one of the one of the finest.
Field of Dreams. You just can't.
You just took a shot at Field of Dreams.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Did I say Field of Dreams? We're going to have to edit that out. Field of Dreams is definitely not overrated.
Don't edit this out.
You can keep this. I meant Dances with Wolves.
Okay.
Dances with Wolves is overrated.
When you said Field of Dreams, I said, how dare you, sir?
Field of Dreams I can't watch because I will begin weeping.
Emotional. I was going to say, I can't believe you just took a shot at Field of Dreams.
Again, I'm tired.
I know.
Dances with Wolves is like 4 hours long.
Yeah. Right. You said you paid to see Draft Day in a theater. I saw Draft Day at a screening pre-theater release because I did Costner's press junket for that movie. And we did it. We sort of did it as an interview about all his sports movies, which was fun because we talked about Draft Day for the requisite 25 seconds that we were supposed to because he was on a press junket for Draft Day, but then went down this crazy rabbit hole of all of his sports movies. It was pretty great. And he, of course, is a huge, you know, sports fan. So,
The Ringer, our friend Bill Simmons' website, I wish I could credit the writer who wrote it, and I don't remember now. It's the 30th anniversary of Bull Durham coming out, which scared the heck out of me because it makes me feel old. Although I was not old enough to see it in the theater, and when it came to home video, my dad wouldn't let me see it either. I was like maybe 11 or 12.
It's good parenting, turns out.
And when I actually first saw it, it was all edited out. It's like I saw it like on, but, you know,
TBS. Did you see it on an airplane or something?
No, like on TBS or something when I was a kid. Anyway, it's the 30th anniversary of it coming out. And so the Ringer did an interview with Ron Shelton, I think, is the writer. Ron Shelton? I think that's what it is. Anyway, very enjoyable read about him talking about the foundations of what he was thinking when he wrote that movie and what he did to get it made.
But he's awesome in everything. To the point that when
this guy also made Tin Cup, so it was also this director.
Tin Cup is so good.
I was going to say, I feel Tin Cup needs to move up in the sports movie pantheon. People don't rate it as highly as it should.
I used to play golf here and there with my mom, actually, and I just I don't have the patience for golf, so I play like that. All I want to do is hit the ball as far
as I can. Go.
I was like, I don't care if I hit it into water. I kind of like hitting it in the water. It's fun when it goes
splash.
In the water. Yeah. I'm just trying to crazy stuff.
One of my favorite moments in that movie is when they're on the driving range and he hits the first shank and they're like, oh, ha, 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 ha. Then he hits the second shank and it goes from zero to 15 on the meter.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that moment so much.
I like him so much that I was on a cross-country flight a couple years ago. And I might have even been flying to Europe by myself for some reason. And
that's a whole other podcast.
Well, and I was looking for a movie to watch, and he's in this movie called 3 Days to Kill, which is completely unremarkable and unmemorable. And it involves – he's estranged from his daughter, and he's a CIA agent. He has to assassinate somebody. It's not good, but I was like, Kevin Costner's in it. This is going to be good. And he was pretty good. And I'm looking at his IMDb filmography now because I wanted to remember the name of that movie. Listed on here is 2011, Field of Dreams 2, Lockout, short film in which he's credited as Iowa Farmer's dad. What is that? Field of Dreams is a short film, Field of Dreams 2? Does anyone know about this?
I'm stunned.
Okay, enough.
I do want to ask you about movies on planes, though, only in that the way they edit them out is interesting. You talked about on broadcast TV, they're editing out the cursing, maybe the sex scenes, that sort of thing. Have you ever been on a plane and watched a movie that I watched, Almost Famous, on a plane once? That was, by the way, not the first time I'd seen that movie. It was the 100th time I'd seen that movie. But I was like, oh, my gosh, Almost Famous. I'll watch this for the 100th time. They edit out the plane crash
scene.
That's
right. So actually, Rachel and I, we all fly a lot. And
we will exchange texts when the new movies come out on Delta.
Yeah, Rachel and I fly Delta a lot. And at one point this year, Delta changed their movies.
Excited.
You run out of stuff.
I go to the West Coast a lot.
Right.
And so in a lot of these 3-hour block flights, perfect for a movie, I was so excited. I go, Rachel.
Right.
Delta changed out the movies. They're all new movies.
And of course I was like, okay, list them all for me. Tell me.
There was a Tom Cruise movie where he plays a pilot that I happened to see.
It's about the Iran-Contra affair, right?
No, it's about him smuggling drugs.
It's a Tom Cruise movie.
It's about him smuggling drugs to Colombia and stuff.
Iran-Contra.
I saw it. I just watched it for a second time. Mm-hmm. I saw it in the theater, and I noticed that they edited out some stuff that happened when he was messing around on the plane.
In Almost Famous, the plane crash is a pretty important.
It's a vital scene.
Scene.
I would say.
So they're doing whatever they're doing, and then all of a sudden they cut to everyone's gone home and is sad. And
that's yes, something happens in that scene that's awfully important.
Absolutely.
Are we talking about the NBA?
Yeah, let's go back to the NBA. I do love Kevin Costner, though. I'm a stan, as people say, for Kevin Costner. The other thing that happened was so we're done talking about Phoenix and Philly. I think Philly, the Kawhi Leonard thing is definitely looming. It was interesting R.C. Buford's comments last night about, you know, we still – our number one option is to keep Kawhi Leonard.
Now, did he say that because that's honestly how they feel, or did he say that because he wants to make it clear they're not taking
exactly.
a poo-poo platter?
Of course. Yeah, both. I mean, I think that's probably a little bit how they feel. I don't know that they're confident that that can actually happen now.
I mean, I'm sure that's how they feel, and that, sure, if they kept him, that would mean that they had repaired the relationship.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you – there's nothing you can trade Kawhi Leonard for that is going to equal a two-time Defensive Player of the Year, Finals MVP, who isn't even 27 yet.
He's about to be, but yes.
Right? So no matter – even if they pull off one of the great trades of our time, it's going to be tough to get value for him, assuming Kawhi remains healthy.
Yeah.
And his – whatever this injury issue was, is cleaned up. So, of course, that's their preference. I believe them. But, yes, it also helps with trade value to say we're not going to just
– we'll know that they think it's possible when they offer him the Supermax. Until then, I mean, I don't
– I agree. They're really –
they're not going to do that until they feel like everything's fine. Like everything's copacetic between him and Pop and him and Tony Parker, if Tony Parker's even on the team, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, I just feel like it's not going to be a short period of time here. They had if they could have had an opportunity to trade him yesterday, they were never in that mode at all.
I don't think anything even really happened.
Exactly, they were never in that mode at all. So now I think it could go long, and I now think because I've been talking about how LeBron and Kawhi are connected, I now am backing a little bit away from that. I think LeBron will operate without – I think LeBron's decision will come and go, and Kawhi will still be a star.
Well, he may not have a choice other than to operate independently.
I think so.
Every team that's interested in trading for Kawhi, the first thing they want to do is get permission to talk to Kawhi's people, his uncle and his agent and whoever else is advising him, and they have to ask the Spurs for the – I don't even think anyone's even asked yet.
I admire you think that they go by that's actually happening.
Although, some teams do, even if they tamper, some teams will go through the will also do the official appropriate thing.
Ramona had a story the other day about the Lakers and how, in the wake of their multiple, I don't want to call it multiple slaps on the wrist because it's been a lot of money, the NBA has fined them, that there is now the edict that there's no behind the scenes, nothing.
Boy, did I hear from executives about that story.
Oh, I mean, Ramona and I talked about it before she wrote it because I had tried to interview somebody there about something, and they wouldn't talk to me because of this meeting. And I was like, hey, Ramona, did you hear about this? And she had already heard about it, of course, because she hears everything. And it was like everybody. It was like everybody was there. And it had
– You mean the Pop Kawhi meeting?
No, the Lakers don't tamper meeting. The Lakers
– Well, look, I don't know what's really going on, okay, because I don't have Rob Pelinka's phone tapped. But – let's just say that not everybody believes – and let's just say nobody that I talked to. Multiple – I want to say 5 to 7 different teams chortling. And it could be just Laker jealousy.
Oh, everyone hates the Lakers. Everyone, right, yeah. The Lakers are the boogeyman of the NBA.
But I'm just saying like they all think that was laughable, that concept that the Lakers aren't tampering. And like they're not saying that Rob Pelinka or Magic Johnson is tampering. They just say they have 500 different ways to tamper.
Well, the timing of it suggests, and I think this now is probably 2 or 3 weeks ago at least that this meeting happened, the timing of it suggests we are now approaching go time. So no matter what's happened before now, we have to put up the appearances now.
The NBA needs to get rid of the tampering rules.
I agree.
They essentially have.
They do. The fact that there is a loophole out there about players talking to players. First of all, everyone's an adult, and so to imply that, oh, wow, Paul George would never have thought about going to the Lakers if somebody hadn't put that idea in his little head. Like, Paul George knows how to read. So the fact that, you know, oh, this is what we might offer and this is what we want and this is the salary we might give him, to imply that the only way he could have found that information out is because someone from the front office spoke to his agent is ridiculous.
Along those same lines, that's probably why we should alter the way the draft is presented, because – at the end of the day, the picks are going to become public via social media, no matter how you want to frame that.
That was the best.
But just on tampering, too, the fact that there is a established loophole that the NBA office has given its blessing to of players being able to talk to players makes it ridiculous. And the fact that everybody goes through the media, too, you can say to any reporter, I mean, this is how you guys do this kind of reporting, right, during this next week. You talk to one GM, he might tell you what he's interested in, what he wants to do. You go talk to a player agent. They might tell you what they want.
A lot of lying going on.
But if a front office wants to use one of you guys as a go-between, it's not as if that practice is A, not available, or B, not legal. So what's the point?
I don't know. I have no answers. Well, it's honestly not that interesting to me, because it's like.
But the funny thing is, for LeBron, for example. When LeBron made his last two free agent announcements, he made the announcement before he told the team. If you're a high enough level player, you don't even really – you don't have to tamper.
What's your over-under on when LeBron makes his decision?
Everybody will be on holiday July 4th. It'll be over by July 4th.
My over – I'm setting it at July 11 and a half.
Nope.
You think under?
I think way under.
Really? You think it's going to come fast?
I do.
Okay.
And I also think that Kawhi has now been – with the way the Spurs have now made it clear they're not
– I was going to say, we thought Kawhi was connected because we thought once Kawhi made his decision, the dominoes would fall quickly.
Right.
Kawhi did make his decision, and he made it early enough to impact all of that stuff. But, and the Spurs have basically said, yeah, no.
Yeah, it's because of the Spurs. I don't think the Kawhi thing – I have to qualify all this. Everything changes in the NBA by the day. But my feel is now that – Kawhi and LeBron. First off, I don't think there's much of a desire for Kawhi to play with LeBron. I don't think they
really have a relationship.
Well, that's LeBron didn't have a relationship with Kevin Love when they played together, although they played on an Olympic team together. But I think Kawhi is now not going to enter into LeBron's situation. I think that could drag out all summer, could drag out to February.
Happens if Paul George stays in Oklahoma City?
Right now, I'm 51% LeBron to L.A.
That's it?
Regardless of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard.
Okay. It's not a lot of percent. I mean, that's not a lot over 50. Only one percentage point by my math.
How come?
I would say, if I was percentage-wise, I would say 51% L.A., 40% Cleveland. What do I have left?
10? Nine percent.
9% Philadelphia.
9% is not bad for Philly.
That's where I'm at right
Why?
Now.
Why?
I can't say.
Yeah, I had to ask.
Can't even give the Kings half a percentage point.
They are a super team now.
Who was it? Who declared their team a super team last year?
Derrick Rose.
That's right.
Derrick Rose declared the Knicks
a super team 2 years ago.
That's what it was. Okay.
Boy, oh boy, that didn't go well.
Not since Derrick Rose declared the Knicks a super team have we heard. I think this is going to be a different free agency for LeBron. And when he makes up his mind, I think it's going to be less about the roster, even though the last two times were heavily about the roster. I think it's going to be I want to have happiness.
I saw some people from Clutch, the agency Clutch, with a K.
Thanks for the clarification.
At the lottery hotel. The other day, and one of them asked me, "Hey Zach, when's your vacation start?" And the other one said, "Oh, this person's asking everyone this. Just ignore this person. They're being mean." And I said, "July 25th.
Mm-hmm.
I'm flying to Europe." And the person who asked the question, I don't know. I don't know. That might be too early. I said, stop. So, don't tell me.
LeBron's two previous free agency switching teams decisions came on July 9th and July 11th.
This one's going to be
different. However, he had more control over the information, whereas this decision, I believe, is going to involve enough other people that he would have to do
Rachel,
it for them.
You know LeBron really, really well.
I do.
On a personal level, after everything I've seen him go through, mm-hmm. I just want for him, to be happy.
That's very nice, Brian.
Honestly, I think that's going to be a guiding principle here.
I'm interested sort of what happiness looks like for him today versus what it looks like if with whichever team he picks, and all the teams you mentioned this could be the case for, he is out of the playoffs in the first or second round next year.
Great point. Like if – let's say on July 3rd, because I'm now hedging before July 4th. Let's say on July 3rd he announces he's going to play for the Lakers. And let's say Paul George – stays in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. And let's say Kawhi doesn't get traded to L.A. Let's say he stays or whatever. And let's say the Lakers are like, well, I guess we're going to sign LeBron and we're going to re-sign Julius Randle. LeBron might say, okay, I'm doing this because my family wants to be in L.A. and this is where long-term we're going to be, and my kids want to play in L.A. and, you know, high school and everything. And I'm just going to do this because this is great for my family. Do I think – when there may be 31 and 26 or whatever,
right,
which they may be, sure, with that team, do I think he may look back on it and regret and have like regrets in various moments? Yeah, I think that could happen. But I also think that there, with no great option developing, I think he's just going to choose his compromise, and that's, you know, maybe where it might be headed.
We shall see. We cannot end this podcast without talking about Luka Doncic. The second,
especially since Brian's learned to pronounce his name.
Yes, the other.
I
love these challenge trades like this on draft day because that trade is Travis Schlenk, the Hawks GM, saying we think Trae Young is better than Luka Doncic. Period. Like
I'm not sure about that.
No, well, they got an extra asset, and we'll talk about that. It's like, so everyone is super pro Mavs. Everyone is killing the Hawks. Everyone is super pro Mavs. Luka mania is sweeping the world. And look, I agree. I mean,
I walked around New York City this morning and people were talking of Little Eltsack.
Little Else.
Kevin Knox, you could hear his name on the streets.
No, he said Luka mania is sweeping the world.
Luka mania.
And
I get that. Like, he's the most exciting prospect in the draft. A lot of people who know a lot of stuff said it was ridiculous that he was not the number one pick. Lots of teams tried to trade up to try and get him at 3-4, wherever. And Dallas made their move, and they got him. And it's unbelievably exciting, and everyone is, you know, the Hawks passed up on a once-in-a-lifetime chance to get Luka Doncic and instead traded down and got Trae Young. You know, they did get a really good draft pick. Top five protected next year, top five again, then top three. It's not like they got nothing. They got a good draft pick, and –
How swamped could they have been? I'm actually asking this. I don't know. How swamped could they have been with offers, given that I think Trae Young would have been available one or two picks lower, correct? Do you feel like Trae Young was a top five lock pick?
No.
So if that's the guy that they were targeting and saying, oh, we could trade down because we could still get Trae Young and that's who we want, and it obviously was who they wanted because they could have picked from a bunch of guys at number five. They can't have been that swamped with offers for the three pick if they said, oh, we need an offer that will get us Trae Young, and they could have gotten him at eight, right?
Well, we don't know that because – and this was – Woj tweeted this when he tweeted the top six picks are focused on. There was a lot of late Orlando is taking Trae Young.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
A lot.
Orlando, right, that's fair.
You take the player that you're comfortable with when you're spot, but Orlando didn't need another development big.
No, but one fell to them, and they're thrilled.
Yeah,
right.
But there was a lot of
it was
in the last 24 hours leading to the draft. There was a lot of Orlando's going to take Trae Young. So everyone's beating up the Hawks, and I get it. It's much more exciting to take Luka Doncic, but they did a version of the Celtics trading down
for Tatum,
and got a draft pick that isn't quite as good as the one that the Celtics got. Now, the Celtics got – it was the weird Lakers-Kings thing for a while where it was 2-5 or now it's top one Kings. But we're going to have to see how that goes. Dallas, you know, I mean, Dallas was really bad last year. Really, really bad. Doncic, they've added Doncic. They're going to add somebody in free agency. Is anybody in the Western of the eight teams that made the Western Conference playoff race, you know, Oklahoma City is a big question mark because of PG. The Spurs are a big question mark because of Kawhi. Let's say one of those teams keeps their guy just for the sake of saying it and one doesn't. Well, the Lakers are looming as a team that will rise up. Memphis is going to be much better than they were last year. Phoenix is going to try to win. Sacramento is going to try to win. The Clippers are pretty good. Denver's pretty good. Like, I don't know. Like, that pick is top five protected. If you told me it was the seventh pick or the sixth pick next season, I wouldn't be like, I don't think it's like this. Yeah, Dallas is going to try to win. It's trying to win is one thing. I don't know that you can look at them and say they're likely to make the playoffs next year.
Look, Travis Schlenk has the job because he is an excellent talent evaluator and an excellent scout. That's why he has the job. He went through the process, and I can promise you he wasn't focusing that much on what they were doing on the floor because that's not what there was anything was going on in Atlanta. He went through the process, and he believes that Trae Young is a better player than Luka Doncic.
I think fundamentally that's what he believes. I know.
I don't think fundamentally. I think it's quite clear.
Yeah, I think people will spin it. You can spin it the other way and say, well, he thinks Trae Young is close enough to being as good as Luka Doncic, that's the extra
that
pick
worth
makes
extra,
it worth it.
Yeah.
I think if he thought Luka, I think he just thinks Trae Young's better, period.
I think this was a, I think he did think that, and this is a great hedge that he made. I think it was a smart trade because now, let's say Luka Doncic becomes an all-star in year two and the Mavericks take off and it's like, oh my God, Atlanta passed him up. Oh my God, Sacramento passed him up. At least he can say, well, we got a draft pick for him and we traded back for him. And I think that I would wager today that that would be a lottery pick next year. Now, it may be closer to 12.
Could be 11. Could be 12. Right. I would definitely wager on it being a lottery pick.
Yeah. And he's got another bite at the apple there, even if Doncic is great. I think Travis handled it. Assuming that he had Trae Young higher on his board, which we have to assume that he did.
Sure.
I think that trade ended up in a like a correct place for both teams because if you read the reporting leading up to the trade and I checked in with some people today and believe this was true, there was all this stuff about Wes Matthews and Kent Bazemore being swapped also as part of the deal, and Atlanta wanted this pick. They wanted a pick, and Dallas in the end said, we are not giving you a pick and taking on an extra year of money via the Kent Bazemore Wes Matthews swap. And rather than have the whole deal collapse over that, Atlanta said, let's just take the veteran players out of the deal and swap the picks and swap a future pick. And the Mavericks protected it. It's pretty well protected, like, against catastrophe. Top five, top five, top three, top three. Like, that's pretty decent to strong protection, but also appealing enough that Atlanta can look at it and say, hey, we could get a mid to decent lottery pick. I think that's like a correct trade. I thought it was a good trade.
So I haven't. Should I say a trade rumor that I haven't verified? That's not responsible, is it? Never mind.
Oh, that was really exciting.
I was going to say.
I'll tell you off the air.
Okay.
It's better than his 51%.
Are there any other draft thoughts before we wrap up here that people really wanted to get to?
I have a question for you guys because Zach is wearing his Dartmouth shirt. First of all. We should all.
It's a beautiful kiss.
I'm raising my hands as if people can see me. Yes.
He's punching
yes,
me both
yes,
fists. Wait,
yes.
Wait.
He's also
first
wearing
he punched,
a Houston Astros hat.
He punched.
No, the people think this is an Astros hat. It's a WNBA hat. Oh. Super bad branding by the WNBA because everyone's like, oh, you're an Astros fan? I'm like, nope. It's the basketball league that people really would like you to pay attention to. It's not the Astros.
Is that the logo for the WNBA?
I don't know what this is. It's a WNBA hat, though. It's a logo.
You don't even know
logo.
Which team it's for.
No, it's a league logo. It's like
it's
an alternate league logo.
Okay.
Zach, who just punched both fists into the air over Dartmouth and then raised both index fingers. We're number one?
No, the yes, yes, yes.
Yes,
team.
Yes. Okay, all right. Okay. So I'm on my way this afternoon to Chicago because I'm speaking at Northwestern Medill's graduate school graduation.
Now, you were working on your speech a few weeks ago.
I was.
Where are you at with this? Are you comfortable? Are we happy?
I'm comfortable.
Are we practicing in front of the mirror?
Right. So I'm comfortable with the speech, and I'm thrilled. It's cool for your old school to ask you to speak at commencement. But I am nervous. It's funny you bring this up. I'm very nervous about the fact that I'm going to get up there and I will have my notes in front of me, but I'm not good at memorizing things. Like a speech.
But yet you say stuff extemporaneously on air thousands of
times. Right, but those are – right. But that's different from, hey, I have a written speech and I have to say it. And so I wanted to know, do you guys have any memory tips for remembering like a 5 to 10 minute?
How many people are going to be in attendance?
Is that relevant?
I want to envision the crowd. I want to envision the scene. People. I want to really get into it.
It's just for the journalism school, so about 500, I don't know.
It's a lot. It's a good amount of people.
I picture posts like
post-it notes?
Of the low variety. No. Think of like cornerstones that you have to get to. Like I have to get
right.
from – like you have certain sections that you sort of know, maybe not every single word for word, but you kind of know what this section is. So it's like, okay, I know in the order – I've made many toasts at weddings. This is how I've done it. where you use like, okay, these are the 5 points I need to make. These are the
right.
5 plot points. Let me memorize the order that they're in.
That's good.
And I can
– See, that's a good tip.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Do you have anything useful?
I've had to give a decent amount of speeches because my dad and my mom have both been honored at all these like things.
Right.
And I get to speak at them. They ask me to speak at them, and I go like talking points because I don't want to memorize. I don't want to memorize things. I just want to get up there and talk. But I've got like a few headings of things I want to get to, and then once in a while I'll think of a line.
Right.
Beforehand that's like that line needs to be said that way and
right.
I'll write like a couple of lines like that or at my sister's wedding.
I feel like for a commencement speech you kind of got to have it written
yeah,
out. You can't just sort of wing it.
No, I agree. And I hear something else I think is important.
I guess you do.
This sounds like very, you know, basic level. We're like a block from Juilliard here. I'm sure this is not being taught. But just read it aloud like because you will recognize what you need to do with various pacing.
Right.
And you may think that you know, oh, I'll just know, but various pacing and various emphasis and stuff like that.
I got another tip for you.
Okay.
Don't plagiarize. How about that? How many people have gotten caught plagiarizing commencement speeches? Like there's been 3 scandals where like someone gives a commencement address.
You know
it's like, oh, it turns out they just Googled it and plagiarized it.
Like,
how dumb do you have to be to do that?
She is a writer.
No, I just wanted to.
If she plagiarized, I would be.
I just
so
can't. But I just am segueing to like. I can't believe that people don't think they're going to get caught doing something like that. It's amazing to me that anyone thinks like, oh, no one's going to figure this out. I'll have this quip about sunscreen, and no one will remember that it's like.
20 years ago, I went to my friend's graduation at Princeton, and the commencement, the valedictorian who was selected to give the speech, at least at that time, I assume they still do, gives the speech in Latin.
What?
They did at the time. This was in the late 90s. And I don't know how, like, I guess at the graduation.
Does this person want everyone to not like them?
I think it's tradition.
Okay.
They must practice it because the class, will laugh at a certain point, like, to pretend like they all understand Latin.
Ah.
I thought that was one of the most ridiculous and pretentious
things. Drop some foreign language into this. Just start speaking.
You want to give me some Croatian that I can
put
in there?
I'll give you some curse words. Yeah.
here's another thing. I spend every day on TV when I'm on The Jump or on ESPN, other platforms, practicing not cursing because you guys know how often I curse off the air.
Right.
And I just have to – so if I'm really
– But, you oftentimes will rehearse the monologue. Sort of at a faster pace than you do.
Right. We do that for the video cues.
Right. But you see, you're rehearsing it.
Yeah.
Important commencement address question to me, indoors or outdoors?
Indoors.
See, outdoors – so you're fine. You do whatever you want.
Right.
I feel like outdoors in June if it's like 95 degrees,
no,
you got to cut your speech in half. You just, right. You got to get in.
I'm actually,
and
you know
out.
What? I'm assuming it's indoors. I should double check. That's a good
my
look.
Graduation.
Another good tip.
My
Zach.
College
I think
graduation.
It's
it was like 95 degrees, and everyone was like, "Let's just get the hell out of here."
Yeah.
And like the guy spoke for 20 minutes, and from minute
That's
eight
not
to
wise.
Minute 20,
yeah,
it
nobody
was like,
wants. Nobody wants that. Nothing. Nothing. I'm worried. Mine's going to be too short.
We were polite not to boo him.
There's no such thing as too short.
No, there is. There really isn't.
That could be the secret
you
to memorizing. It could
yeah,
be like
right.
two paragraphs and then I'm done.
Read a
It'll
poem.
Be fine.
Read a profound poem. Just get out of there.
Well, but then someone will accuse me of plagiarizing.
That's quite an honor, honestly.
Oh, well,
you should
nice.
Be very proud of that.
I'll be proud of it if I make it through successfully. I'm not sure I should be proud of it ahead of time because
this,
we don't know what a disaster
will
it might be.
Will this be recorded and then disseminated?
For sure. Has every one of these things is.
Yeah, they have a live stream of it.
So what was your process on this? Like, when did you begin writing this?
Probably not as early as I should have. But yeah, thank you for calling me out on that publicly.
You write?
I write every day.
You write every day.
That's part of the – that's not a problem, but that's part of – I write every single day, five days a week.
Which you deliver live.
Yes.
This should theoretically be no problem.
It's fun. Just keep it fun.
Yeah.
Everything – fun with like just a little bit of profundity, but just mostly fun. And also make fun of people.
So I need a Zach Lowe section.
Just make fun of people who are there, who are in, like part of the
I think it'd be
school.
Better if I just made fun of you for a paragraph.
Like a comedian. Where are you from? Milwaukee.
Okay, so I guess that's a no on does anyone have any more draft thoughts?
Well, the only other thought I had off of your Dartmouth t-shirt, your t-shirt is providing me with a lot of material today, is on the elevator up to the studio, Brian, I asked Zach, I said, did you play water polo at Dartmouth, considering we know Zach's illustrious water polo mm-hmm. lineage and history,
lineage.
Right? With your dad. That's fair.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? And what did you tell me?
I said I quit my freshman year. Well, this is why. First of all, my high school team was awesome. We actually played Dartmouth and beat the crap out of them my senior year.
Wow.
And then I went there and I wanted to play sports in college, but I wanted to like play screwing around sports. I was like, I'm done playing serious first of all, there was
hacky sack.
No.
I wanted to play water polo, but I wanted to like play it like in a loose environment. Yeah, we have a club, we show up, we practice every once in a while, we play some games, we go out and have beers afterwards. Like, it's not a thing. And there was a 0% chance I was going to swim in college. My last swimming race, I threw off my goggles. I was like, I'm done with this. Swimming is terrible. Just absolutely terrible.
You're just trashing your dad's life work here.
And then, he knows how I feel about swimming. It's not a secret. You got to be – I think any individual sport, like running, swimming, tennis, you got to have a little bit of a screw loose to be great at those sports because they're just so mentally challenging.
Right.
When it's just you and whatever, the clock basically. And then the coach decided he wanted to make Dartmouth a serious water polo program. And we got an email that was like, all incoming freshmen, we will be starting doubles practices. The first one will be at like 6:30 in the morning. Bring your jeans because we're going to practice, you know, like that's a thing that happens.
Wait, bring your jeans to practice in the pool?
Yeah.
Come on.
No, I've done that before. I had done that before. Like that's
Why?
Like a, so that you have to like, you're drowning. And so you have to stop like, yourself from drowning. Yeah. It's like we used to do egg beater. Egg beater is like the way you tread water in water polo. It's a different way of moving your – it's like treading water, but it's a more efficient. You do it with like a 10-gallon jug of water over your head. It's just drowning. You're basically just like stop yourself from drowning to help your endurance.
So it's like our jobs every day.
So I got that email.
Stop yourself from drowning.
I got that email. I was
That's
like,
going to be my commencement speech on Saturday.
I was like, I don't want to do this.
Right.
I did this. I don't want to do this anymore. I did not go to college to wake up at 6:30 in the morning for anything.
Gosh darn it.
Can I say that
– You sent us an email.
I didn't even want to take an 8 o'clock class
in
college.
Did you or did you not send the two of us an email this morning at 6:17 a.m.?
Well, do you know why?
No, actually. I picked up the phone and said, what in God's name? And an email with an opening exclamation point.
No, it did not have an exclamation
point. Oh, yes, it did.
Yeah, and it was, thanks for doing this, exclamation point.
I believe it was, hey, guys, exclamation point.
Oh, you're right. It might have been, hey, guys.
I was like, who is that excited at 6:17 in the morning?
I'll tell you exactly why I was up. I was up at 5:30 because this podcast is at 10, and it's at 10 because you're leaving.
Well, I'm leaving
and
at 3.
I have to go to a preschool summer solstice celebration.
Summer solstice party off on me, buddy.
Right now that I'm going to be late for it, I'm going to get the side eye when I walk in
from the 4-year-old
for summer solstice. And so I needed time to prep. I wanted to read some of the draft reviews. I wanted to do some calorie stat stuff.
Ridiculous trade.
Right. That, although that was a great – that recitation was really good and led to my larger thought.
So I was up at 5:30, emailing you at 6:17
with exclamation points.
Texting people. I assume that no one has their phone on when they're sleeping.
Exclamation point.
Like I texted some people in various time zones.
I don't understand. Who does that?
Who's has their phone on?
I've had people I live in Pacific time, as you guys know, and so I will text someone maybe something at the end of the night. Oh, do this tomorrow. Let's do this tomorrow. Do whatever. And I will have people come back and say to me like, oh, thanks a lot. My phone went off at 3 a.m. I feel like that's on the person.
Yeah, I work under the assumption that when you go to sleep, you turn your phone on mute.
Right. Yeah. Like that's if you are purposely leaving your phone to make those kinds of notifications at night, that is on you.
Oh, my phone is on mute. I will not get after I go to sleep. After I'm there, so so I was up early, and now I have to go to summer solstice.
Woo-hoo.
Where one of our good friends, whose child also goes to the school, is Argentinian and is very upset that Croatia beat Argentina in the World Cup yesterday. And my daughter was chanting at him, Hrvatska, Hrvatska, which is Croatia, and Croatian Hrvat this morning. It was great.
That's great.
Rachel, it is an honor.
We're poking fun at you.
It's a great honor.
I look forward
to watching it.
You won't watch it.
No, I'm 100% watching it. That's only if there's
some like terrible YouTube clip of me like completely forgetting what I'm going to say in the middle
well-deserved
and start
honor.
Quoting lines from
Rachel, stay off Deadspin.
Get on Deadspin.
Whatever happens in the speech, stay off Deadspin.
Say something that gets you on Deadspin.
Don't be on Deadspin on this.
It's a great honor, second only to appearing on the Low Post podcast. And thank you for your time, Wendy. Thank you as always. And free agency starts shortly. Have fun, guys. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.